Good morning, it's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. So good to have you with us. Coming up in about half an hour or so, Governor Gavin Newsom with his second State of the State address from Sacramento. We'll particularly be looking for what he says about the housing affordability challenge in California and the homelessness crisis affecting California cities. But we begin the hour with LAPD Chief Michael Moore, his regularly scheduled visit to talk with Air Talk listeners, to take your questions at 866-893-KPECC or the Air Talk page, kpecc.org. Chief Moore, good to have you with us again.
Good morning, Larry. It's great to be here.
Let's start, first of all, with the federal government's announcement of a crackdown on sanctuary cities by ICE officials. What is that going to mean as a practical matter in Los Angeles?
I think it's going to mean very little. I think the reality of the 100 additional agents that's been identified spread across some 9 or 10 cities, work the math, it's about 10 more people in the Southern California region. And while those resources are going to help ICE with its ongoing enforcement efforts, I don't think that the public will, by and large, see any material change.
So for people who might be employing undocumented people, you don't think there's necessarily going to be more enforcement around businesses?
Well, I haven't heard of that focus. The information we have is that these added resources are going to be focused on the criminal immigrant who's here unlawfully, who's been ordered for final removal, and that population and the risks that they pose to public safety. ICE's responsibility in that area, they'll engage in that. Again, I caution, though, employers and others, you know, hiring a person who's not properly documented in this country is a crime. It's not an LAPD matter. It's not a matter that we focus on any more than we focus on tax evasion. The federal responsibilities relative to immigration law, relative to other areas of their book of work, that's their arena. Our arena is public safety here in Los Angeles of some 4 million people, and LAPD doesn't get those two mixed up.
All right. Are these individuals that the federal government is focusing on who might otherwise not be detained in custody here locally? So, you know, in past years, they would have been held on detainers for ICE. Are those the individuals they're looking at taking into custody?
I believe so. I think that these are, again, the federal government continues to have this challenge where it's attempting, with the use of detainers, which have been found unconstitutional, to try to obligate or require local law enforcement and state officials to maintain the custody of an individual beyond their bail or beyond a statutory ability. Again, the courts have found that to be unconstitutional. I look forward to the day that Congress and the federal government gets that right.
All right. Chief Moore, again, if you'd like to talk with him about issues in law enforcement generally or specifically about the Los Angeles Police Department, we're at 866-893-KPECC or the Air Talk page, kpecc.org. In case you just joined us, we'll be bringing you Governor Newsom's State of the State address from Sacramento coming up later this hour. The State Attorney General's office is investigating allegations that LAPD officers framed alleged gang members, putting them onto a gang registry without documenting that they were actually gang members. Your thoughts about this investigation? Last time we talked a bit about your concerns.
It's a serious investigation, and it was brought to our attention by a mother and whose son was identified as being a gang member. And upon our notifying the mother, she challenged that, and we launched an immediate investigation and found that I found that the evidence exists that an officer falsified information that resulted in that entry. We corrected that immediately as far as removing that information, as well as the complaint investigation, which has I've directed that and the involved officer to be removed, to go through an administrative tribunal process. I've also expanded the investigation to include others that that officer and the other two that were with him worked with, and that investigation now continues, and I look forward to bringing to the public when the investigation is complete the depth and breadth and extent of this. In the meantime, we've added safeguards and narrowed the criteria of what will be entered onto the California gang database. I believe that it's an important database that helps us solve violent gang crime. And it's critical, though, that the information in it be accurate, that it be legitimate. I'm embarrassed that I had a failure, apparent failure by this one officer. But I also believe I have failures on the part of other officers. The extent of that I have yet to determine fully with the investigation. Each of these officers deserve a due process, and I'll wait for the final investigation to make any final decisions. But lastly, we've also launched a series of inspections and audits to look back and to look forward as to ensure that this information is, again, accurate, complete. And we've also brought in all of our Metropolitan Division officers and our gang enforcement detail officers and provided that revised training and our expectations as to the accuracy and legitimacy. Again, garbage in, garbage out. There is no sense for what occurred here, and I won't tolerate.
How does someone get off that gang list? People, of course, go in and out of gang life and criminal activity. So for someone who's turned his or her life around but has perhaps a longstanding gang affiliation earlier, how do they get off that list?
Well, so there's a couple of different ways. One, they can ask to be removed and provide evidence or information that would substantiate that they're no longer involved in and or associating with the gang lifestyle. Secondly, is in the absence of having police contact. In other words, we don't come across the individual in a detention or an arrest situation involving information that leads us to believe that they're still engaged in a gang lifestyle, that they'll be removed after 5 years. We've recently changed the time limit for juveniles, young people that are under 18 but over 14 years of age, that there's no contact with them in 3 years, that they'll be removed from the database. Let me clear, the database only is a law enforcement only database. No one else has access to this. An individual on that database is not preempted from getting a job or going to or being considered for college or other activities. No one else has access but the right need to know law enforcement. And I look forward to restoring the trust in that database and its legitimacy. And again, LAPD, our requirement that we have as to what constitutes entry has been tightened, and we're working with the Attorney General's office. Welcome his engagement. We've met with his staff already, and I continue will work with him to ensure that independent authority is reviewing our work.
Have documents and the like been turned over yet to the state AG?
They have come down here, and we're arranging for those documents to the extent of what their inspection will be to be formalized now.
Sometimes gang membership, or I should say association, is a bit messy because you've got some family members. Many of our listeners have family members who are in gangs, even though they themselves aren't. How do you determine what an association is? Because you may go to parties, you may socialize with people who are gang members and engaged in criminal activity, but not oneself be doing that.
Right, and that's where we expect our officers to use good discretion, to use their expertise. A person going to a party, a house party or an event with an individual who does identify themselves as being a gang member doesn't make that person an associate, just that type of interaction. What we're looking for is instances in which a person is associating with a gang member engaged in crime, engaged in activity that creates public safety hazards and violence in our community. That level of association is where those are the individuals we wish to identify. Be clear, the idea of putting thousands of people in a database just so that they're there is of no investigative worth. In fact, it clogs up the system. Last year, over half of our homicides were gang-related. We solved 76% of our homicides based on good intel, good cooperation by our community members, and it's dependent that we have accurate and legitimate information in this database. To fill it with people who are not associating with gang members, who
defeats
are
the purpose.
Not engaged in it, it's counterproductive.
We're talking with LAPD Chief Michael Moore, joining us on Air Talk ahead of Governor Gavin Newsom's State of the State address. If you have questions for the chief, we're at 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722, or the Air Talk page, kpecc.org. Noah in Santa Monica wants wants to ask about police response on vagrancies. He says it seems like it's harder and harder to get the LAPD to respond when someone is engaging in troublesome behaviors living on the street.
Well, you've mentioned three different circumstances there: troublesome behavior, living on the street, and some other matter. I think that the key here is that arrests of individuals experiencing homelessness for crimes that they're committing against others, whether it be crimes of violence or it be narcotic, the sale and distribution of narcotics, those numbers are increased from year over year. And that's because our officers are focusing on the problematic behavior as far as the lawlessness of individuals, again, preying, you know, committing crimes of violence or trafficking of narcotics. Where we get into the more subtle and nuanced area in which we lead with services and efforts to find shelter and support is for individuals who are living on the street without shelter. More than 30,000 last night were without shelter in this city. And the idea that the LAPD is going to come in and sweep the streets of those individuals because they're vagrant or they're some term as such is not the police department that LAPD stands for today. We are not the solution to the homelessness crisis that we have in this city. The solution are more complex in dealing with mental health, with supportive services, with housing, with getting resources to people so they can have shelter and they have it readily available. However, being homeless does not give you a right or an alibi to commit crimes on others. And I think the department is doing a very good, our people are doing a very difficult and good job in discerning when instances require and justify an arrest of an individual, and when instances we would look to social service providers and others to provide resources.
You're constrained, as I understand it, by the Boise decision right now because there aren't shelter beds available for people to go. So the court has found that people can't be moved off of public streets if there isn't a place for them to go to. But at some point, if there are sufficient shelter beds for people, the department is going to be called on almost certainly to move individuals from spending the night on public property. Are you comfortable with your officers doing that then?
Yes, I am comfortable if we do it smartly, recognizing that mental health professionals, outreach workers, people who are not the police ought to lead that and ought to lead that in mass and ought to lead that 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, things that currently are not occurring. The only resource 24/7 is the LAPD and LA Fire. We've got to fix that. And if the idea is, well, we're going to amplify or speed this up by having LAPD become that enforcer, that's where we lose the public's trust and confidence. We've got to show compassion in this situation, and we've got to insist that our leadership build the resources and the right resources to deal with this crisis.
LAPD Chief Michael Moore joining us on Air Talk. JSK writes on the page, I suspect much of the public doesn't understand what sanctuary jurisdictions are all about. They're overwhelmingly about protecting those already in jail, releasing them so that intensive, possibly dangerous arrests have to be made later, instead of federal immigration authorities taking direct custody of illegal immigrants who have already been arrested by local law enforcement for non-immigration crimes. It's not about local law enforcement actively enforcing immigration law. It's about the refusal to have that basic level of cooperation between law enforcement concerning those already in custody. Chief, your response to JSK's post.
So the state law that was passed by the voters gives very explicit directions as to what local law enforcement can and can't do relative to the custody of these individuals. I believe that the long-term solution on this is that the federal government obtain warrants. They go through a judicial review. If the federal government would present to me a probable cause determination with a judicial review to hold that individual, then I would be allowed to do so. This is not a terribly complex issue. It is entirely a failure, in my view, of the federal government to recognize and honor the courts and the laws of the land, which have very clear requirements relative to the police or law enforcement or the judicial system maintaining the custody of individual without bail and without proper and timely judicial review.
We have a follow-up from John in Echo Park says, Chief, you just made a comment about those living on the streets not harming people directly, but how is stepping over heroin needles, broken glass, like outside my house, how is that not a harm to people?
Oh, that absolutely is a harm. It's a public health hazard. It's a risk of disease and And I'm very concerned about that. And I applaud the fact that added sanitation services have been brought on, and we need to expand it even more. The reality of the matter is that there are people who have narcotic dependencies that have unsafe living conditions because they're living on the street without sanitation. But I welcome the fact that I'm seeing more and more sanitation trucks. I'm seeing more and more cleanups that are going on regularly. But again, is there enough? I don't believe so. When you have 30,000 people living out every day, if one thinks about their own home and what their services are, that not to have those services, how quickly their home would become unhealthy. That's what we have in many of our communities. Added resources are being brought to bear, added capacity, literally tons of human feces, broken items, syringes, other such unsafe circumstances are being swept up and cleaned up regularly, but we need even greater capacity.
We're just talking with NBC4's investigative reporter Joel Grover about the sanitation issues yesterday, and I just got an email that the little park near where I live, which has a children's playground, they just found needles under the bench where, you know, the parents and the kids sit in the park. So this is a widespread problem. LAPD Chief Michael Moore joining us on Air Talk. We'll continue with the chief. He's going to stay with us right up until Governor Gavin Newsom's State of the State address. The governor undoubtedly will spend considerable time talking about homelessness in major cities in California. It's become an issue that affects most communities. We'll hear what he has to say about state resources. It's Air Talk on KPCC. Back in a minute. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPECC. I'm Larry Mantle with LAPD Chief Michael Moore. We're at 866-893-KPECC or the Air Talk page, kpecc.org, if you have questions for the chief. Chief, according to State Auditor Elaine Howell, letter that she sent to Governor Newsom and the legislature that there were several California police departments, including LAPD, Sacramento, Fresno, Marin County sheriffs, that needed to do more to provide privacy protections for the images of license plates that are part of the automatic readers that assist in law enforcement efforts. As I understand it, but you can elaborate, this is to keep unauthorized people from doing lookups of license plates. What is the department doing in response to the audit?
So we wrote back the two aspects. We have policies and procedures. They had just not been incorporated into our department manual. So there are practices and protocols as to the level of training, the right of access, the right to know, need to know, to query this database. This is a database that captures license plates of vehicles that, as officers drive around a city, they can capture on these automated vehicle cameras that are on our various black and whites. The critical nature of that is that it's a way of identifying stolen vehicles that have been used in violent crimes in a live sense, meaning that a car passes an oncoming black and white, and we capture that license plate, and we find that vehicle was reported stolen or may have been used in a robbery. And that allows the officers to make that discovery and otherwise would be prevented because they just can't keep track of all the stolen vehicles. The key is a criticism is that when we capture vehicles that are not involved in crime, at least at the point in time in which we capture that image, is what do we do with that image? And currently, we save or retain that for as much as 5 years. And the reality is what we found is that many times crimes of violence and other crimes involving community safety occur, and we have a partial license plate or a full license plate, and we determine that vehicle was seen at a corner of, say, Figueroa and Adams, or out in the valley at, say, Van Nuys and Sherman Way. And that gives us a clue or gives us information that allows us to solve those crimes, identify those offenders, and bring into the justice system. Now, privacy advocates will differ about whether or not that database of those images law enforcement should have access. And that's where we part our ways. I believe that the community safety and the way the laws are been fashioned by our community want to afford local law enforcement with reasonable access to these types of images so that we can go out and solve crime and bring people who are committing crimes against others to the justice system. And to ignore that because of these privacy concerns, I think, is counter to public safety. It is important that law enforcement not have This is not a fishing expedition to go try to figure out the movements of vehicles and what people may be doing as far as their day-to-day habits, unless, again, we have a reasonable suspicion of some type of criminal involvement, which should draw our attention.
Well, I think one of the issues of concern is, you know, years ago, you could have individual police officers who would have access to people's personal information without a legitimate reason. And there were laws passed to make sure that officers weren't checking on boyfriends or girlfriends, right, or, you know, things like that. And my sense is of the audit, there's concern that the plate readers could similarly be used for non-legitimate investigative purposes.
I agree, and that is why we're setting up an audit schedule to ensure that the people who are accessing the information have a right and a need to know that there's a legitimate purpose for that inquiry, and they're not looking up a boyfriend, a girlfriend, or some other type of suspicions about a wife or a spouse, and that they're just going about this for their own nefarious or their own personal reasons. That really exists in all law enforcement database inquiries. This is something that is not unique to license plate readers. LAPD, as police officers, have access to various databases that are law enforcement sensitive, and in each of their accesses, they know that they're being tracked and that they're subject to removal. And we do fire and remove officers when we find that they've crossed the line and they're no longer accessing it for legitimate police investigation.
Jeff in Woodland Hills wants to know your policy, Chief, on senior lead officers participating in social media. Jeff says he thought it was a great resource for his community, and he'd like the senior lead officers to start posting again.
So we have a number of senior lead officers that do post. I'm on various social media channels, as is a number of my command staff, and rank and file. The responsible action, though, is to recognize that as they are representing the Los Angeles Police Department, that their views are professional, that their views demonstrate our ethics, our values. And I've found that in some social media posts and sites, that those ethics and values are not consistent, that we have racism, we have prejudice, we have biases, we have hate speak. And in those forms, it's not appropriate for a police officer to be a member of that group, because if they are a member of that group, and they don't push back, or they don't dismiss or call out and ridicule such a post, then they're acquiescing. And then people believe that law enforcement is racist and that we are biased. And so we've had discussions that I've had attended actual meetings in the Woodland Hills, Canoga Park area, and spoke specifically to this issue with some concerned groups, because we found a couple of locations out there that the nature of their remarks and the social posts I found disgusting. I found them lacking of human dignity, and it was certainly posts that we would not have any identification with, and we would not allow officers to be a member of.
There are a lot of public entities that do social media posting that is great at engagement. Something as benign as the National Weather Service, they have a wonderful Twitter feed, very personalized, and obviously they're not getting into controversy with the weather, maybe. But, you know, they avoid, debates over climate change and the like. Is there a way for the senior lead officers to really share about what's going on in their community, without crossing into that territory?
And yes, there is. In fact, today, if all one needs to do is go to a Twitter feed or Instagram or Facebook and query LAPD, and you'll find hundreds of instances in which officers and command and are all posting and, if you will, contributing to a social narrative about safety, about issues of prevention, about efforts to apprehend those responsible, and are doing it in a productive, professional, and I believe respectful way. What we tell our officers is that we want them to post something that they'd be proud for their son or daughter to read, and that they wouldn't mind seeing on the Channel 7 or Channel 2 or KPCC program as an utterance. This badge means a great deal, and there's a great deal of sacrifice to provide for the safety of all Angelenos, and the professionalism of our people have to remain absolute at the pinnacle.
We're talking with LAPD Chief Michael Moore joining us today on Air Talk. Just a reminder that Governor Newsom's State of the State address is scheduled to start sometime close to 10:30. We'll be bringing it to you just as soon as the governor starts speaking. So we're going to take you right up to his first couple of words, and then we'll join the governor just as soon as he gets underway. We have a question that comes in from our reporter at LAS, Ryan Fonseca, about the Vision Zero program. Can you explain how the LAPD has cited for speeding or pedestrian offenses, you know, what it's done differently under Vision Zero?
Yes, I think that what we've done differently is we're working in more in a more harmonious relationship with the Department of Transportation and understanding matters of how to go out and identify strategies to prevent collisions, whether through redesign of roadways, traffic control signals, markings, what are the engineering changes? Also, what are the education efforts? This current year, our focus is on pedestrian safety and cyclist safety, and particularly hit and runs, that we see increases in the seriousness and the rate of mortality, if you will, for those two groups. And that's, those changes are going in the wrong direction. Vision Zero, the goal is to have zero fatalities in the city of Los Angeles. And in achieving that, it's going to require all of us to slow down, to get our heads out of our texting and driving, to get our heads out of our texting and walking, and pay attention to our surroundings and respect each other's roles as we go about moving around the city. So that's changed. I think it's a greater emphasis on prevention and intervention strategies and not just an over or constant reliance on enforcement.
Because apparently in New York, Ryan was saying that nearly twice the number of speeding tickets were issued when they went to Vision Zero, over 50,000 summonses for failure to leave, more than five times what the average had been prior to Vision Zero. So I'm wondering if you're statistically showing that difference.
So this last year, we showed us more than a 20% increase in our traffic sites for speeding violations. There was a couple years in which our speeding violation citations went down, and that was a direct result of some state law relative to the use of radar. Currently, if you have speed surveys, a state requirement as to what constitutes a lawful speed limit, you have to have a survey to understand 85 percentile. It's a measurement. It's actually, LA Times has a
op-ed. We just did a segment on this last week, as a matter of
fact. And LA Times has an editorial about pending state changes, state law changes, that would help us by slowing down. The reality of what we need is, with city council support, we're able to get those surveys in place. Now officers are being able to use radar much more regularly throughout all these high injury network locations, locations where we're seeing these high mortality rates, where we're seeing people who are being killed because of speeding motorists. So that, I believe, has been responsive, and the public can expect that we're going to continue to focus our enforcement on those areas of the city where we're seeing the highest levels of collisions resulting in injuries or deaths. What I need and would ask the public to do is that automobile safety has gotten so much better today, engineering standards, and even our traffic controls. But what's going against that is the amount of time we spend looking at our phones, amount of times and the distraction that we take upon monitoring texts or adding and putting in information into our phones rather than paying attention to our primary responsibility, which is either the safe operation of a motor vehicle or the safe operation of walking about the city or cycling about the city. These are collisions that are, that I believe, are avoidable if we exercise the right discipline and we're teaching a generation of children some bad habits. So what I worry about moving in the next 10 to 15 years is that how do we teach the next generation to get away from this this over obsession with our cell phones?
You see it constantly. People in the car, people walking down the street, crossing streets, not even looking up because their head just, you know, buried in the screen.
And you have electric vehicles that make absolutely no audible sound. They've got headphones in both their ears. These are all matters that over a million cycles, people do it regularly, and they're able to escape having that collision. But if we're going to get to zero, we've got to do a lot better than what we're doing right now.
Are there any efforts with, you know, kids to take this into schools to sort of, at least I remember when I was a kid in public school in California, we had a lot of stuff about bike safety and about walk, you know, not jaywalking. Is any of that done?
Oh, absolutely. There are programs today for both elementary schools, middle school, high school. And I want to say that I believe the insurance agents, insurance industry is also stepping up. They're bringing applications so that your mobile device is inoperable when it's hours of movement. They're monitoring your car and the use of that mobile device to encourage safe driving habits. I also want to send a shout out to AAA Southern California, who has a walking program to bring awareness to safe walking and the ability to have a healthy and productive exercise, but doing it in a manner that observes the rules of the road, that recognizes that many motorists are distracted, and even though you're in a crosswalk, they don't see you, and unfortunately, you're going to lose in that sense.
All right. Again, you can ask questions of LAPD Chief Michael Moore. He's with us until Governor Gavin Newsom's State of the State address, 866-893-KPECC, or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org, where you can ask your question of the chief. Chief, I wanted to ask you about the Kobe Bryant Staples Center Memorial, 10 o'clock on Monday morning. Staples Center AEG is asking that people not go down to LA Live. It's not going to be shown on any displays there. They're asking people to watch or listen to it at home if they don't have tickets to the event. What are you planning in the way of a law enforcement presence on Monday?
Well, we recognize this is going to be a major event and is going to have the world's attention on it. We're working very closely with AEG and the Laker organization to ensure that it's a safe event. There'll be added security and staffing both by AEG and the Lakers themselves. And of course, while we are discouraging and are doing everything possible to communicate that there is no event downtown, if you're not one of 19,000 ticketed individuals, we recognize that people nonetheless may gather, and we'll have some contingencies for that. But I'm thankful for the responsible acts of AEG and Lakers. They're not showing this on the Jumbotron. They're not broadcasting it on large public venues. This is something that Spectrum, it's my understanding, has got the sole feed, and they will be pushing out so that people can view it at home and at other locations. We just ask that, recognizing that it's a Monday, it's a regular business day, it's going to be busy downtown as it is, that people, if they don't have a ticket, recognize there's no event there. There's no procession before or after. So this will be an event that the best location to join this family and the other seven individuals who were lost in that tragic collision, an aircraft collision, is to do so at a home or another location away from the downtown area.
I just personally wish that, even though, of course, Kobe's second home was Staples, this would have been done in a larger venue that could have accommodated, because thousands and thousands would have come out to the Coliseum. But your thoughts on doing it in such a small venue where so many more people would have wanted to come?
Well, I think that what's needed is to honor the desires of all the families that are involved in this. You know, this is a tragedy on so many different levels, but first and foremost, it's a tragedy for these families. And I think paying respect and giving them time to grieve and allow them to do it in a manner that they feel is best and is most fitting, that's what we all owe the Bryant family and all the other families. To choose and to dictate a different venue or a larger size so that the convenience of people who could come and honor and pay tribute to this man and his daughter and others, while I understand that desire, I also believe that that let's take a breath and reflect and ask, if this was our family, would we want our desires to be honored, or would we want the selfishness or the person who just wants to come to an event to override that, and not realizing the trauma it may be further imposing on this family or the others that are involved.
We'll continue our conversation with LAPD Chief Michael Moore. Again, we're awaiting the start of the State of the State address by Governor Gavin Newsom in Sacramento. It's Air Talk on KPCC. We'll be back in about 90 seconds. It's Air Talk on 89.3 KPECC. Larry Mantle with LAPD Chief Michael Moore. We're Heading up toward the State of the State address by Governor Gavin Newsom just as soon as the governor begins talking in Sacramento. We'll take you to that address live. Just updating you on some of the top issues in law enforcement and with the LAPD. Chief, the San Pedro jail is reopened. What's the history of that facility?
Well, we're very thankful for the support by Mayor Garcetti and the full council to allow us to reopen that jail on this past Monday after having it shuttered for nearly a decade. It was built with Prop Q money that afforded a new harbor station and a new modern jail facility, and it was open for 6 months, and then it was closed in July of 2010 as the city and the department was going through the worst economic recession in generations. And the organization actually lost nearly 1,000 of our civilian personnel, which really required us to retreat back to some basic operations.
All right. We now go to Sacramento. Governor Gavin Newsom, State of the State.